smelling song. Thank you, Scotty, the producer. This is the Green Zone. My name is Lachlan Cross, a.k.a. Locker. Jamie is off this week. He takes the bye weeks off. Our Would You Rather today. Text line is open. Phones will be open at 4 o'clock. 877-332-8255. I'm going to make a call here. It's live. You get to see the game live, okay, in person. Not television, not sitting at home. I don't want to have it either or. We talked about this earlier. It's a live setup. You're at the game. Would you rather watch the Riders in a Grey Cup or the Jays in a Game 7 World Series? Again, 877-332-8255. Let's get to our smelling salt segment of the day.
Everything you need to get ready for game day.
Now, the Green Zone's NFL and CFL insider, Dave Naylor.
I said earlier, Dave, that I can't believe we're having actual conversations about smelling salts, but it's based on what the NFL has done. Have you got an update on that situation? Because they did sort of come back and amend the original point from yesterday.
Yeah, it's not that smelling salts are banned, it's that teams cannot provide them. And my instincts on this one would suggest to me that there's probably a legal angle to this. Mm. Right? That if you acquire smelling salts, which are not illegal, and you use them, and somehow you damage your lungs, and there's some stuff out there on smelling salts, and you chose to use them, that's the way the world works. But if the team provided them to you and you found out you damaged your lungs by using them over a period of time, I would think there might be some liability here with the teams and the league. I mean, I said the same thing when the leagues brought in the Guardian caps, right, and said you could wear them in games. I'm like, well, wait a minute. If there's a piece of equipment that could mitigate the chance of getting a concussion that you're wearing in practice and the league forces you to take them off to play the game, that sounds like a liability, doesn't it? Right? So that's why players are allowed to wear them. It's up to them. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but I do have instincts for these kinds of things. I think that's probably why you have a distinction, because it's like, well, what's the difference between you getting them themselves or the team providing them? I'm sure there is a legal difference.
So we're doing a preview of the upcoming NFL season. So we've had guests on, and we're touching base on different teams through the course of the last couple of weeks, right? And today we had RJ Choppy on. He's on The Fan in Dallas, and he does a daily show with, it's RJ and Shan, or Shan and RJ. And I brought it up with him, and he said that he also thinks it's ridiculous that we're having a conversation about smelling salts. But his point, which is very intriguing to me, Dave, was you're going to trust players to bring in their own bag of smelling salts? And I didn't think of that either, right? Like now you're leaving it in the hands of the players, who will do anything to get an advantage over somebody. Like I don't think it's a good idea on both sides of the fence.
Yeah, I can see that perspective as well. And I have heard stories of teams where, I won't cite the team and the player, but I this is a National Football League example. It's not from the CFL. But I know an instance of a team where a guy on the team was known to have passed out certain types of pills that nobody else knew what they were, and they were taken. That kind of stuff has happened.
Yeah.
In terms of players bringing their own goodies, you might say, to get whatever advantage you can. So yeah, but there's nothing stopping players from doing that now, right? Like that's the thing. So it's, you're not necessarily sanctioning the players to do whatever you want. You're just saying the team's not going to stand and take the liability of passing out something to a player that a guy could come back in 5 years and say, hey, I'm having breathing troubles. It was this smelling salt that the team provided to me.
Well, I think the other issue too is, And again, this makes it even more convoluted, but they mask concussion symptoms.
Yes. So, it's fair enough.
Yeah. And everybody has a story of, their grandfather or their father playing hockey or football and getting knocked out and the trainer on the bench running out and reviving them with smelling salts, right? So this is, this is not something new to the league. They know what this is. I'm interested because I couldn't find anything on the CFL side from a rules perspective, Dave, about smelling salts. Has it ever been in the rules? And the other sort of side question to that is, do you see it much in the CFL?
I can't think that I've seen it that often.
No.
And, you know, relative to the concussion thing, I think what it does, if I understand it, and I've never tried smelling salts, is it provides like a boost of adrenaline. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not a neurologist, I'm not a doctor, I think that's pretty clear. But I can understand where, you know, already I think you have an issue with guys sometimes tempted to override the symptoms of a concussion because they got so much adrenaline running through their bodies in the middle of a third or fourth quarter of a football game.
Yeah, fair.
So you throw that extra level of adrenaline in, you know, I can see how that would make somebody ignore what they otherwise might feel. Not that they wouldn't feel it, but it would just make them feel like, okay, I've got so much adrenaline through my body. I've got to stay in this game. I've got to win this game. And we know, you know, ultimately that's where the decision making rests on concussions, right? You can do all the protocols in the world. You can come up with everything you want and the best doctors and all that. But ultimately it's up to the players to disclose in a lot of circumstances. There are circumstances where certainly you don't need the player to disclose it. It's visible to everybody. But anything that would restrict or interfere with the player's ability to disclose, I can see where that's an issue. And look, the CFL, health and safety is a big, big part of the CFL. I attend the league's meetings every offseason, and I can tell you those meetings, health and safety drives a lot of the agenda right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny because the CFL and the NFL have not had much of a relationship in the last 10, 15 years. I would say going back to the Bills in Toronto series, you know, kind of in the late or first decade of the 2000s. The leagues have not, you know, had a lot of crossover interaction at the football level or the business level. But I think at the health and safety level, they have. You know, there's been communication between the two leagues. So when the NFL does something and they have data and they have research on it, I think there's a sharing, you know, of kind of information so that the CFL can make its own decision, you know, based on, you know, comparing its own data. It may have, say, this all went through, you know, on the kickoff issue, for instance. So, you know, I would be really surprised if this is not something the league is talking about next offseason, just by virtue of the fact that it's come up in the NFL. You know, just it almost behooves the league to look at it.
Well, that was actually going to be my next question. Do you think that the CFL is going to follow suit, and how long do you think that process is going to take?
Yeah, I bet they will.
And
look, I think it would happen. Like it happens in an offseason, right? And when you're. It was funny because I'll go to the kickoff thing, right? Because they talked about that for 2 years.
Yeah.
And one of the years, it felt like they were going to change it. And then this year, they went back the other way. The difference in that one was you were measuring, you know, trying to come up with what the risk was player safety wise versus what is the negative to the game. And that's a tough thing because, mm-hmm. you know, you never want to put players at risk for better entertainment, right? And the CFL ultimately made that decision based on its own data, not showing demonstrably greater risk to kickoffs than other plays. And it wasn't like they said, well, you know, screw it. We're going to live with this higher injury rate data because, you know, we want to have entertaining kickoffs. And the other thing about it, what they found was that the majority of the injuries they were getting on kickoffs were not concussions. They were not head and neck injuries. They were basically, you know, pulled hamstrings of guys running down the field at full force. And while you never want injuries, obviously the seriousness of a guy pulling a hamstring and a guy suffering a head or neck injury are different. So that's kind of the way the league looked at that. But on something like this, I mean, I don't know what the negative would be for the league if they banned it, right? Like, they're not banned it, but just said players got to do it themselves. They did the same thing. There's no outcry from fans. There's no great negativity from players because they can still use them. And the league just kind of, you know, even by saying you don't provide them, you're kind of signaling to your players you don't recommend them to some degree. So
that's
you're kind
point.
Of leaning in that direction. I expect this will happen this offseason. I'd be surprised if it doesn't.
Dave Naylor, our football insider here on the Green Zone. I'm going to get you to stick around with us for a bit longer here, Dave. I know that you've been hanging out at some NFL camps, so we want your feedback on that, including not only the Lions, but also my Bills watching their camp. So that's next. More with Dave Naylor on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball. Don't stop me now.
This is the Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. flying solo again this week. Jamie's back next week. Dave Naylor, our football insider, has been doing his own NFL preview and hanging out at a couple of camps. Let's start with the Detroit Lions, Dave. How do they look? Are they going to finish at the top of the NFC North again, my friend?
Yeah, look, I get it. At the end of the segment, you got to ask me about my Blue Jays game 7. Sorry.
Okay, so would you
don't let me go on the end of that.
Okay, do you want to weigh in on the would you rather?
Yeah, I will. But I'll spin the story at the end. But just remind me at the end of the segment.
Okay.
So we'll carry with the Lions. I'll tell you, the Detroit Lions are a lot like the Detroit Lions you remember. I mean, just offensively, all the same playmakers, all the same personnel, minus their center, Frank Ragnow, veteran center who retired right before camp. And I know no one gets excited about offensive line news, but when you're talking about a center that retires right before camp, they've already switched who they're playing. They were playing Tate Ratledge, their second pick at center for the first week of camp. Now they're playing Graham Glasgow, who's a veteran who was a guard last year, but has played center in the NFL. So that's the only issue on the offense.
Okay.
Defensively, I mean, I remember last year, the second half of the season, half the defense was on IR. And, you know, they've still got some guys that are going to wait into the season to get back. But I'll tell you, I spent a good night of that practice on Monday night just watching Aiden Hutchinson and watching him go and watching him twitch and watching him twist. And, boy, I'll tell you, the Detroit Lions, of all the NFL camps I've been to, and so I remember this last year, David Sanchez and I were there, and he was just, like, in awe because, you know, as a former player, they practice harder and more physically and more intensely than any team I've seen. And that was no exception on Monday night. Also had a chance to catch up with Giovanni Manu, the big tackle from the University of British Columbia, who the Lions traded up to take in the fourth round last year.
Yeah.
I talked to him last year. He was just getting his feet wet out of U-Sport. I spent a good chunk of the offseason down in Arizona with a bunch of his teammates on the offensive line, working out with a specific offensive line trainer at a gym down there. And you know, it's been a bit of one step forward, one back for him. You know, I thought he played pretty well in the preseason game the other night, in the Hall of Fame game, and he got pretty good reviews. Again, I watched him as much as I can during practice, but you know what it's like watching practice from the sideline of a football field when you're at ground level. Sometimes trying to break down the offensive line play is a little beyond, but I did get an opportunity to catch up with him a little bit. And you know, I was talking to one of the Lions players, and he had a great analogy. He said, you know, I was asking about the big thing is there are the two coordinators, right? Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator, has gone to Chicago.
Yeah.
Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator, has gone to the Jets. And they've got Kelvin Shepard, who they promoted from their linebacker coach, and they brought back a guy named John Morton, who was the pass game coordinator at Denver last year, but he had been on the staff in 2022. And talking to one of their offensive linemen, fifth-year offensive lineman, and asking him about you know, just the nature of Coyote Awashika is his name. And I was asking him about, you know, kind of how, you know, what's the feel? What's the difference? And he had a great analogy. He said, you know, when you're a backup player and your number gets called because somebody moves on or somebody gets hurt or somebody gets traded,
yeah,
your job is to provide the same standard and not let anything change. Keep the culture, keep the standard. When you go into play, that's your job. It's no different with coaches. You know, they're promoting from within in both instances. They both know what Dan Campbell expects, the culture that he set, and it's no different than a player who's been a backup and being groomed for a job going in and to not let that standard fall. And, you know, Dan Campbell's presence does resonate over that team. The other thing I think it's important, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, is Dan Campbell's heavily involved in the offensive play calling and game planning for the Lions. So it's not like some teams where the offensive coordinator goes and it's like everything's going to be different. Dan Campbell's still got his fingerprints all over that offense.
All right, Dave Naylor, we only have about a minute left for your story, but it's a would-you-rather conversation today. Watch the Riders in a Grey Cup or the Jays in a Game 7 World Series, and you got a cool Jays story for us.
Yeah, I go football all day. I used to be a baseball nutter as a kid and a teenager, but I have, and I was always a big football guy, but I struggle to be a baseball fan these days. I'm not really interested in the sport very much, so it would be football all day for me. Okay, here's my story. 1985, the Blue Jays made the playoffs for the first time ever. They played Kansas City in a 7-game series in the American League Championship Series. I was 18 years old. I was a total nutter for the Jays in those days. When the tickets went on sale, I got tickets to all 4 games, and I couldn't find anybody to go to the last game with me. Like, I bought all 4 right out front. Like, it was games, you know, 1, 2, 5, and 7 or something. And I convinced people to go to 1, 2, and 5 with me, but if it went to 7, I had a solo ticket. And it got to Game 7, and I went to Game 7 by myself.
What?
Sat in those, you know, distant bleachers, the old ones at Exhibition Stadium, watched Jim Sundberg hit the triple, you know, off the foul pole or whatever it was, and Kansas City win. And when the game ended, the stadium cleared out, everybody exited, and I didn't move. I just sat there stoic in the bleachers, staring into the distance. And as I looked over the right field fence, I will never forget what the scoreboard said as I sat there by myself in that stadium at the end of the Jays' 85 season as an 18-year-old. The scoreboard said, the NHL on TSN begins October 14th.
Nice.
That was it. I remember that.
I like it.
The NHL season started a little later in those days, I guess. October 14th.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bit later. All right, my friend. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. Dave Naylor, our Green Zone football insider. The Regina Thunder kick off their season Sunday in Edmonton. We have the head coach, Scott McCauley, up next on the Green Zone, 980 CGME and 650 CKOM. This is the Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Jamie's back next week. I've been flying solo this week. Or would you rather today? I want you to weigh in on this. And you can text. We'll also be going to the phones just after 4 o'clock. Green Zone fan line, 877-332-8255. Now, this is a live. You get to be in the stadium. Originally, when we were talking about this, there was a conversation about maybe doing, giving an option. But I'm picking a live event. I like that. Watching the Riders in a Grey Cup or the Jays in a Game 7 World Series. You can only pick one. I'm keeping track of the results that are coming in as well. And again, the Green Zone fan line, 877-332-8255. All right, now, we are joined by Scott McCauley, head coach of the Regina Thunder, Football Club, Prairie Football Conference, Canadian Junior Football League. You kick off the season, Scott, in Edmonton this weekend against the Huskies. Would you rather, I was thinking about this, I wonder if it's beneficial on some levels to kick off a season on the road. Scott?
Yeah, we do it on purpose, to be honest.
Okay.
We always try to make sure that our first two games, or one game for sure, is on the road, and that way you can kind of get those long stretch or long road trips out of the way. And right now guys are excited to play and they got tons of energy, and to me I'd rather do two long road trips at the beginning of the year and just get it over with, and then now we can, you know, just be closer to home and shorter travel days later on in the year once you're starting to get beat up and tired.
Is there a team building aspect to being on the road with the guys as well?
100%. I mean, it's an opportunity for the guys to be together, you know, for, you know, 8-hour trip to Edmonton, 8 hours back, and then also just being in the hotel and eating supper and stuff together. But it's also pretty compact as well. It's not like they're able to kind of go out and have their own free time and stuff. Everything's pretty scheduled, and we tend to move pretty fast while we're on the road as well. But, you know, I think the biggest part with that too is it's also having time with the coaches. Like, you know, going into an exhibition game, you're playing group 1, 2, and 3, say on special teams. Now you can concentrate just on that first group, and then also, like, just to have 46 guys on the road and smaller numbers gives you an opportunity to spend more time with them and kind of dive into their systems a little bit more and develop those relationships.
Overall, how's the squad look this year?
I'm excited to see. You know, it's one of those years that we know, like, we got quite a few veteran players that are back. I believe it's like 62. You know, I look at our, you know, at our defense, I think, you know, most of the DBs are back, at least 5 out of, say, 6 of them. You know, linebackers, you got, you know, two and four starters for sure. And the fifth guy that went in last year back. And D-line, like, at PSC Final, we were talking about this the other day, like, 5 out of the 6 dudes that played in that game are back as well. So you got a pretty veteran-laced team on the defensive side, and you could say the same thing for the offense on the offensive side. So we're good that way, but at the same time, we got a lot of young guys in as well. And I'm just kind of excited to see how we put it all together and how these guys come forward.
How does the turnover, Scott, compare to past years for the Thunder?
I'd say it's pretty comparable.
Okay.
I mean, every year, like, our goal as an organization is to be graduating 12 to 15 guys a year. I mean, I think that if you can have that many guys graduating each season, then you're a more veteran-laced team. You got some bigger, stronger guys that, you know, that are mature and stuff on the field as well. And it helps, I think that's the most successful teams tend to be the teams that have the most old, like, have the older type of guys. And then another thing, it speaks to the organization as well. If you can keep guys around for 5 years,
yeah,
you're doing something right, you know? And that's not, you know, since COVID, we put a huge emphasis on really working hard to try to keep, you know, as many veterans as around as we possibly can. And that's what we've got the most amount of success so far.
Scott McAuley, the head coach of the Regina Thunder, joining the Green Zone today. And I'm wondering, I know it's early into the season, and might not be an easy question to answer, but how would you describe your team this year?
That's a good question. You know, everyone's asking me, and I don't know what it is with, like, this year. Like, every year I kind of have a good feeling of, like, kind of like who we are and what we're able to do. Like, are we an aggressive and physical team, or are we more of an athletic and methodical team? And I just think, like, it's a good mixture. Like, I look at our offensive line, and they're that's a scary bunch of five guys out there. Like, they're big, they're strong, they're physical, they want to play physical, they want to run the rock, you know. But then I look at our running backs, you know, and we got a fullback that's pretty physical, but then we got some running backs that are, you know, very athletic, you know, and maybe kind of just trying to figure out the right mix, you know, when I look at it. And even on the defensive side, we got some big bodies that love to lay the boom, but at the same time, you know, Paul's put together a defense that takes a lot of guys to be, you know, very methodical in the approach of how they play and knowing where they're supposed to be. And so it just seems like, to me, like, we just got a good, solid team all around. Like, it's a good mixture of being athletic and also being physical. And the biggest thing is, like, now can they play for each other and play for the full 60 minutes against whatever type of teams we play against.
You did talk a little bit about the rookies. Any standouts, anybody we should keep an eye on when we go into the games?
You're going to see one of our quarterbacks is Jalen Zelonka. He's very athletic. He's the type of guy that we'll put in and have certain, you know, packages for him to utilize his skill sets. So he's a guy that you definitely want to keep an eye on, and I think he's going to be kind of the future of the teachers as well over the years. So he's someone to keep an eye on. Receiver, you got Spiro G. I don't say his last name. It's fairly long and very disoriented. So, but he's from Campbell, and he's special. He's fast, and he can run really crisp routes, and he can catch the ball really well, and very mature and stuff like that. So he's another guy you can kind of keep an eye on. And then I kind of flip to the defensive side of the ball, and you know, like, there's no rookies that are popping out to me right now that are starting, but there's going to be about four or five guys that are going to be traveling on the defensive side of the ball that are going to be contributing to special teams. And you got a guy named, like, Alex Junk out of Weyburn. He's one of the top, I thought, the top linebacker coming out of high school this year. That's playing for us. And then also there's a guy named Daniel Sikora that he's actually out of Alberta. We're lucky to land him. And he's a dime by trait, but he'll be used on special teams and stuff. And he's a guy that can fly around and make plays pretty quickly. So I expect him to do a lot of great things as well. And then there's also a guy named Enoch on our D-line from Lobolis. And he's been fantastic. He's big, he's strong, he's athletic. And what I didn't know is that he's very, very, a very quick learner. And has really learned our systems and can apply all those games and different things that we do very quickly.
I've learned that about football guys. Quite often, they're a lot smarter than they probably get credit for, just based on what they have to, you know, between the years is a big part of this game.
Big time. Again, I mean, the game's changed too, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, back when I played, you lined up two dudes in front of each other, and you just tried to figure out who was either more physical or stronger or not going to quit. It was kind of the team that would win. And now, like, a lot of it's like X and O's and kind of a chess game out there, right? Trying to,
yeah,
create leverage and outnumber people, and that's kind of the name of the game now.
I'm guessing you have September 6th circled on the calendar when the Hilltops are in town?
I haven't got quite to that point yet.
No.
I'm sure a lot of our alumni have.
Okay.
We're going to concentrate on the Edmonton Huskies right now, where they're going to be a good team and they're pretty strong and big. But, of course, we enjoy playing the Old Toss and we look forward to playing them every year. And we'll, I'm sure our directors and alumni and stuff will make that into a big game.
So I'm curious about, and this has been a shift. I don't know how long you guys have been doing this, but you play at a Libel, but some of the bigger games you play at Mosaic, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so that Hilltops game is going to be at Mosaic. And I do you have a preference, or is it just like, let's go play ball?
I mean, you got to kind of have that mindset. You play anybody, anywhere, anytime, but you know what? I'll just be honest. I love playing at Libel. I want to play at Libel. I want to play the Saskatoon Hilltops at Libel. You know, I think that'd be a fantastic game. The place would just be blowing up with excitement, and it'd be just loud, and it'd be pretty magical. But at the end of the day, you know, it's tough to put 3,000. You can't put 3,000 people into Libel Field. And so
yeah. That
tends to be the reason why we go to Mosaic, and that's about it, is just to make sure we get more bums in the seats and give people opportunities to watch, you know, local talent play throughout the province.
That Libel, you know what? It's a cool venue. I think it really is. I'm glad you like it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I like it. I love it.
That's awesome.
Nowhere else I'd rather play except for, like, Libel Field. It's fantastic.
Scott, listen, I before I let you go, I had a laugh. I don't know why it struck me so funny, but and I'm not sure who to give credit to. Maybe you have an idea, but the 2025 office theme schedule release video was very funny, very well put together. If anybody wants to go have a look at it, go have a look at the Regina Thunder Twitter page. But if you could pass that along, that was very well done and very creative.
Gotcha. It's Greg McCullough. He's one of the guys on our marketing team, and he seems to be taking over the role of the last couple of years with the Simpsons, now the office, with putting forward our schedule. And I swear to God, like every year, he just sits in the room for 364 days, and the 365th day, all of a sudden the schedule comes out, and there's something super cool. So he's done a great job with it, and we really appreciate it. And then the last question, I would take the Riders in the Grey Cup.
Okay, there you go. The Would You Rather. We got Scott weighing in on the Riders. Okay, my friend, that's awesome. What do you think of the Riders this year? Any thoughts on this squad? 7-1?
Well, I mean, it looks like it's pretty special. We knew before the season, everyone's talking, like when I talked to other coaches and other teams, they felt that the Riders had the had the momentum going in the season with the personnel that they had on their team. And, you know, the Coach Mace and the rest of the coaches there have done a great job with making sure that they are using that talent in the right way and getting buy-in. So kudos to them. And I think you are going to see them in the Grey Cup, and I'll see you there.
Awesome. I really appreciate your time, and I always enjoy our conversation, Scott. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Again, that is Scott McCauley, the Regina Thunder head coach. Their season gets going on the road. They'll be taking on the Edmonton Huskies this coming Sunday, and the Green Zone will be keeping an eye on their success this year. Up next on the Green Zone, we'll update Jamie Nye's Week 10 CFL picks and his ranking, which is surprising based on Jamie Nye, the sports guy's success in this pool in past years. I'm going to share my picks as well if anyone cares. That's coming up next. 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. This is the Green Zone. Jamie and Locker. I am Locker. Jamie back next week. Jamie does picks for the CFL, a pick'em pool. He's in the pool with five others. And so they keep track of it over the course of the year. And in past years, Scotty, he's done really well, hasn't he? Doesn't he normally dominate this? And I think he's been very consistent in past years as well. So this year, he's struggling. His ranking, he's tied for last with Matt Cause. He's only three out from the lead, and there's still time in the season here. But, yeah, he is struggling with his picks this year. So here's what he's got for Week 10, which kicks off tonight, your Thursday nighter. By the way, SGA night, he's going to be in the building, too. They're giving out rally towels and everything, and it's sold out in Hamilton. This is a sold-out game for the Ticats. That's awesome. I can't wait for next Saturday's game. It's an afternoon matchup as well. Hamilton Ticats in town taking on the Riders. So their return from the bye week up against the second best team in the CFL. So Thursday night, Lions Tie Cats, a 5:30 start. And I picked the Tie Cats, and Jamie's got the Lions. Friday night, Elks, Alouettes. This one's interesting because it looks like Cody is keeping the ball. This is his third straight start for the Elks. They're sitting Trey Ford, making him watch from the sidelines. Both of us have the Elks. They've been close, and they're desperate. And I don't know, Cody, when he was in town, that wasn't a runaway game for the Riders. And I think a lot of it had to do with Cody Fajardo. So I took the Elks there, and I'm thinking Jamie had a similar sort of thought process. The womp, womp, womp game of the week is the Red Blacks in Toronto taking on the Argonauts. That's your Saturday afternoon matchup. 1 o'clock start there. And both of us, Jamie and I, both took the Argos. Hold on. No, I don't think Chad Kelly's back. No, he's still not. Zach Collaros is back. Chad's not, so it's going to be Arbuckle. He seems to be figuring it out. It's kind of why he's getting his legs underneath of him. And I think he's actually going to get a win against the Red Blacks, who are awful this year. And then the Saturday night game, you got the Blue Bombers and the Stampeders. Definitely the marquee matchup this week is the Lions and Ticats tonight. But this is a close second. You get the Blue Bombers and the Stampeders. This is an interesting one. And if you go look at the picks, there's no real consensus on this one, including between Jamie and I. Jamie's got the Stamps. And you know what? I think he's leaning on Vernon Adams Jr. because he's back. And Zach is struggled this year. The injury stuff has been a concern. So, but I went with the Blue Bombers. I get a sense they're going to bounce back. That's my pick. So we have the same Elks Argos pick, but we have he took the Lions and I took the Ticats for tonight's game, and then he took the Stamps and I took the Blue Bombers for Saturday night. Not that anybody cares what my picks are, but if we go back and take a look at my picks for the year, I think I might be beating Jamie. He would have a problem with that if he was in the room with me right now. But I think I have the lead, because the last couple of weeks in particular, I've had the edge. Although I think last week we were tied. I think we were both 2-2 with our picks last week. There you go. Your week 10 schedule and Jamie Nye's picks. It is funny. There's quite a few guys here in the building that have pools and things like that that are seeking Jamie Nye's advice in the weekly picks. Our Green Zone fan free-for-all is up next. We're going to open up the phone lines, but I want to focus on one particular conversation that we've been having since we launched the show today at 2 o'clock. Would you rather watch the Riders in a Grey Cup, and we're in the building, you're in the building, okay, or the Jays in a World Series Game 7? You can only pick one. That's the way the Would You Rathers work. I'm actually surprised. I thought it would be a little bit more on the, I'm not going to get into it. We'll hang on to the results until the end of the show. But a surprising number of texts have come in already, and we'll open up the phone lines, like I said, as well. 877-332-8255. That is the Green Zone fan line. This is 980 CGME and 650 CKOM.